cry. Brother, 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 there's far too many.
Welcome back. Tomorrow night is a Bar Band Friday here at Nightlight. Terry Barr from Max Inc. Radio will be here. And Dom Salvia will be here to talk about his new show here at Civic Media that will be on right before Nightlight from 4 to 6. So that'll be a fun show. All right, we are going to pivot here. This is exciting. I have a guest on who is a best-selling author about to join us. And he wrote a book about a gentleman that many of us here in Wisconsin are very familiar with. And he is he goes by the name of Aaron Rodgers. So, Conrad, you know who that is, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
And you're a fan?
I was.
All right, fantastic. We'll see if we can change that. No, I'm kidding. Half kidding. Ian O'Connor joins us. He is the author of Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. Ian, welcome to Nightlight.
Pete, how are you?
Doing great. Thank you so much for your time tonight and being here. This is so interesting to me. I don't even kind of really know where to start with you, Ian, because Aaron Rodgers is such a fascinating character. I totally get why you wrote the book and why he interested you. But can you tell us something about him that you learned along the way and give us just sort of an overview of the book, if you would?
Yeah, by the way, Vince Lombardi coached my high school. The only place he had ever been a head coach before the Packers was St. Cecilia's High School in Englewood, New Jersey.
Oh, wow.
So I was always fascinated. He lived eight houses away from where I grew up. So I was always fascinated by the Packers of Lombardi and Starr and wanted to write a book on a Packer at some point in my life. So Aaron got traded into my backyard, and David Moranis, of course, wrote an epic book on Lombardi. That is my favorite all-time sports book. I would have loved to have had a crack at Vince, but that didn't happen. So Aaron, I was always really intrigued by him from a distance in New York, watching his career unfold. I always thought he was the best interview in the NFL, very thoughtful, engaging, and candid. But I think the one thing I found that was surprising, to be honest with you, Pete, is the amount of players I interviewed from high school through junior college and Green Bay that absolutely admired him, respected him, liked him, loved him as a teammate and a leader surprised me. It was almost unanimous. I thought I would get more negativity, particularly based on the way he's been covered the last few years. And I even think I go back to last summer when he arrived with the Jets. Jets fans watched Hard Knocks, the show on HBO, and they thought going in that Aaron was a jerk, basically. A lot of them told me that. And they were okay with that. As long as he played like a first ballot Hall of Famer, they didn't care.
Sure.
But they could not believe, coming away from that HBO show, how much they thought he was a really good teammate, leader, and they were very happy that he came across that way. So that was the one thing. The teammates en masse, just their respect for him, that knocked me back. I was surprised by that.
That's really, if you hear that, which is so interesting about Aaron Rodgers, because I remember thinking, boy, it's hard not to like this guy. For a lot of his career, he was so good, and he was a good interview. And I didn't grow up in Green Bay, at least the early part of my life, but I was an Aaron Rodgers fan, and I'm not saying I'm not now, but he just seems like he's almost purposefully trying to kind of change his image and be more quirky. And then you hear the stuff about his family, and I'm like, well, that kind of speaks volumes. Like, old friends or family don't talk to him. And I'm just hearing stuff, what I hear through sports media. But has that been your experience? Does he talk to his family anymore?
Well, he did have a meeting with his father last summer at Lake Tahoe, the celebrity golf tournament. His father hadn't seen him in 9 years or talked to him, but he put himself, Ed Rodgers did, in the crowd hoping Aaron would see him. And lo and behold, Aaron did see him, and he decided that day to go over and give him a hug. And Ed Rodgers turned around in the gallery, and he saw his son looking at him 15 feet away, and he froze because he said, I forgot what it felt like to be in my son's presence and to have him look at me.
Oh, wow.
So Aaron hugged him and said, I love you. They each said, I love you. Ed Rodgers cried, and they both said it was a very meaningful 30-second moment. Aaron told me for the book that he wants to have a relationship with his father again. So the family reconciliation would start there. His father was always his idol before the estrangement. And so that's the hope that there is a reconciliation with those two. It hasn't happened yet, as far as I know. But I think then hopefully the rest of the family would fall into place.
So what What is it about that? Does he create these riffs, so to speak, like kind of like Michael Jordan, as an effort somehow to motivate himself, do you think, Ian? Or is that just, does he just get rubbed the wrong way easily?
The way it was described to me by his best friend, Jordan Russell, in the book. And it's funny because Jordan Russell was exiled from Aaron's life for 3 or 4 years too. And he was brought back from the place I call in the book, the island. That's where Aaron puts people that he no longer wants part of his life. And it's a cold and distant place and lonely there. And Jordan Russell was one of the very few who got rescued from the island. But he said, Aaron has always been hell-bent on becoming an all-time great and a master of his craft. And if you're not mission aligned, whether you're a family member or a friend, he will remove you from his path permanently, usually. And that's just the way he is. He's not the first person I've met like that. But it's not a great character trait to have, and very unforgiving in that way. But yeah, and effectively, I think Aaron's at a place now where he's trying to figure out how to end it. And the estrangement has become its own living organism, and he doesn't know how to kill it off. So it's easier to, instead of confronting it, to just let it linger and fester and live on. So yeah, I'm hoping he does figure it out for the sake of him. And it just, as a human being, not an author.
Right.
I was kind of hoping in some strange way that this book would help just get some of it out in public and maybe change the dynamic of that family dysfunction. But we'll see how it plays out.
That is the voice of Ian O'Connor. He wrote the book Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. He's written several books about big time sports figures. Ian, you mentioned before, I thought you said you talked to Rodgers, but the book is unauthorized. Were you able to interview him for the book, even though it was unauthorized, or does he want to fight you? Where does he fit in here with the book?
I had actually handed the book in, I want to say it was late January, might've been early February, and the manuscript was done. And all of a sudden 2 weeks, and that was without him. He had not responded to my messages through the Jets, through his agent. I went directly to Aaron. I sent him my books on Belichick and Coach K.
Yeah.
And I got nothing but indifference and non-responses. But 2 weeks after I handed the book in, I got a message from the Jets saying, Aaron is now willing to see you. So I flew from New Jersey out to Los Angeles, drove to, by the way, I had a bomb scare on my flight. I got diverted to Chicago because there was a possibility of a bomb being on that plane. Thankfully that didn't happen. We reboard the plane after 7 hours in Chicago. I thought I was going to miss the interview for a while there. So thankfully I made it to his place in Malibu, beautiful home right on the Pacific Ocean. His backyard is the ocean. It's a beautiful setting. And wow. I didn't know how much time he was going to give me, but I think what happened is I had contacted so many of his friends and associates. And I think over time they said to him, the guy seems legitimate. He seems like he doesn't have an agenda. And I didn't, I had no agenda whatsoever. And I think Aaron realized that, and he was willing to engage on some sensitive subjects, particularly the family estrangement, and he made it a better book over those 2 hours, and I very much appreciated that.
Wow, that's great. If you're, let's just say, hypothetically, if your plane had exploded and you couldn't make the meeting, do you think he would have put you on the island, or would he have been able to look past that?
Oh, God. Well, I wouldn't have survived the explosion. I don't think so. I would have had bigger problems than being on Aaron's Island.
Of course.
By the way, when I was driving to Malibu, they had like record mudslides out there in February. Terrible. I was afraid I wouldn't get to his house that way either. So, but he was very, when I got there, he was very cordial. And we sat in the back. It's a hell of a backyard. I mean, it really is.
Sounds like it. Jeez.
But because it's unauthorized, he didn't owe me anything. He didn't have any editorial control. He was getting no money from this project, not that he needed it. And so the fact that he sat there, and I would have loved 15 to 20 hours with him to tell the story of his life, but he gave me 2 hours of fact checking. That was very valuable.
Oh, I can imagine. Does that tell you that he read the book and wanted to meet with you? That he kind of does have a plan, or he does like to be unique or mysterious in a bit? Like, it's right there in your title. If he's giving you his blessing, so to speak, without authorizing it, does that mean like kind of the way he acts is part of his plan on some level?
I think a lot of people around the NFL believe that. And he has leaned into this villainous role in the last 3 years that he was assigned by the media after COVID, after he said those four words, I've been immunized, when he was not vaccinated.
Right.
That really changed his entire life, never mind his image.
Right.
But he does seem to lean into that character, and he wants you to think he doesn't care what you say or what you write, but everybody I know who knows him knows that he cares an awful lot about what you say and what you write about him. So he's a fascinating guy, I have to say, very intellectually curious. And one thing that struck me was I said to him, hey, as a biographer, do you understand I have no choice but to write about your family estrangement? But if you feel I actually do have a choice and you don't agree with that premise, let's have that debate right now. And he said, because he's read so many books and biographies, he's a very well-read man. And he got it. He said, I understand if you're doing my life story, you basically have no choice but to include that. And not, I've met superstar athletes, Derek Jeter, one of them, who never would have understood that. So I appreciated that he got it and understood. I had no choice but to write about that part of his life.
That's really interesting. So Ian, was there a moment where you decided to write the book or something that happened? Was it his response to COVID or something? What was going on in his life when you started the book?
Actually, it was the trade. But I was always interested in him from afar, but I live in New Jersey. He got traded to a team that practices in New Jersey. He goes from the smallest market in the NFL to the biggest. And I thought it was the perfect time at the end of his career. He clearly identified something with the Jets that would potentially enhance his legacy in the sport. And that is, it's a franchise that has not stepped in the Super Bowl since Neil Armstrong stepped on the moon. So that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
If I could win a championship for that Charlie Brown franchise in New York City, that is going to feel like I won three championships, not one. So, and he's right. That would be, if he pulls it off, and I've been doing this in New York for nearly 40 years, that would be the biggest New York sports story of my lifetime. And so listen, Tom Brady has 7 Super Bowl rings and Aaron just has the one. He's never closing that gap. But to win one in New York, I think would close it to some degree, because that ring would just feel a lot bigger than one.
Sure, or at least certainly enhance his own legacy. I remember when he took over, I felt like Favre kind of got chased out of town here, and I'm like, this is crazy. Like, I've seen what that guy does. You don't know what you have in Rodgers. Well, obviously they did. My guest is Ian O'Connor. His book is Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. We'll have a couple more minutes with Ian when we come back after a very quick break. This is Pete Schwabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to Nightlight. We are talking with Ian O'Connor. He's the author of Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers, who is a local legend here, obviously, in the state of Wisconsin, and still is. Ian, so Rodgers wins a Super Bowl, and now here it is 12 years later or whatever, and you thought he would have won another one. So I think you're right. Winning one with the Jets would just put him in another category.
Yeah, it's amazing. Those of us here in the New York area are very jealous of Green Bay football fans, because you've gone from a first ballot Hall of Famer in Favre to a first ballot Hall of Famer in Rodgers to a guy who looks like he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer in Jordan Love. And oh, by the way, you had a quarterback by the name of Bart Starr who won 5 championships back in the day. So I've seen a lot of bad football played by quarterbacks in New York. So we're jealous of Green Bay fans. But yeah, it's interesting, because could you imagine if the Packers ever played Aaron Rodgers and the Jets in the Super Bowl? And it's not out of the question, because
right.
The Packers this year considered one of the 3 or 4 teams in the NFC that could get there. And the Jets are considered one of the 3 or 4 teams in the AFC that has the roster to get there. And they got to keep Aaron healthy this year. And let's see how the season unfolds. But Jets fans are having a hard time buying in, because they bought in last year and they got burned after 4 snaps in the first game. And they're having a hard time really embracing the idea that this team could go the distance.
Listen, you don't have to tell me. I grew up in Chicago, so I've been dealing with Packer quarterbacks for the better part of 30 years. What do you think people will come away with when they read this book? Will you change? Not that you're trying to, but will they have a different opinion of him, do you think? Will they give him some, cut him some slack, or what do you think?
I think more, I know more people who have read it have said to me that they like him a little bit more after reading it than they did when they started. There have been a few that have said the opposite. And so what I tried to do is really balance out the last 3 years of coverage of Aaron, which has been mostly negative in the media. And frankly, a lot of it self-inflicted wounds and unforced errors committed by Aaron. So it really was his doing in a lot of ways. The conspiracy theories on top of the Jimmy Kimmel dust up top of, well, the old COVID misdirection play that he tried to run an end around on the media, and it just blew up on him. And So there are a lot of stories of kindness and generosity behind the scenes that his friends told me, associates told me, again, that he doesn't want to publicize. And his marketing agent with CAA, Ed Berry, is frustrated. He said, Aaron's a frustrating client because I want to publicize some of these things that counter the negative, and he won't let me. So I think I bring out a fair amount of those stories in the book to show a complete, or to paint a complete portrait of the human being and balance it out a little bit. And also, I never want to tell the reader what to decide. I want the reader to figure out good guy, bad guy, or somewhere in the middle. And that was my goal with this book.
What do you think about how crazy was, I assume Out of the Darkness comes from when he went into the cave. And I'm hearing this secondhand. I don't know exactly what he took, but as I understand it, was some type of hallucinogenic or something. When I was
ayahuasca.
When I was a kid, a professional athlete couldn't say that. This is just crazy that he can just say to the world, "Yeah, I'm doing this," and people are like, "Oh, okay, you know, like maybe I'll try that sometime." You know, I don't know if things changed that much in sports where a guy could just be that open. Obviously, they have.
Well, he didn't do it in this country. Ayahuasca, he did it in Peru and then Costa Rica.
Okay.
But he had that friend I mentioned who was exiled from his life and is now back in, Jordan Russell. He went on an ayahuasca retreat in Peru in 2019 and came back and said, "Aaron, you got to try this." And he was dating Danica Patrick at the time. So he went with her to Peru, sat for some ayahuasca ceremonies and came away thinking, "Wow, this really was a spiritual cleansing, and I feel like a better man and even a better athlete." He said it helped him play better football. So I think he'll use it for the rest of his career, however long that lasts and beyond, really. I friends of his, more than one, have told me that they feel he is a better person since he started using ayahuasca. So it's helped his relationships, he said, with some people. Hopefully it will help at some point with his family. And I think ayahuasca is here to stay in Aaron Rodgers' life.
I think all of a sudden I feel like the only person who hasn't tried it. I don't know.
I haven't either.
We'll road trip.
Two of us,
okay.
Yeah.
All right, Ian, a couple more questions for you. You've written books about Belichick, Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski, Derek Jeter, Jack Nicklaus. Who of those icons, really? That's an impressive resume of books. Who are you most intrigued by?
Well, Pete, the obvious answer right now would be Aaron Rodgers to try to get more people to buy the book,
sure.
Right? I think Rodgers is really at the top of that list because Belichick was a mysterious figure, but there was a sameness about him as a character throughout his coaching career. Aaron was elusive. He was considered one of the good guys in sports up until 3 years ago. He was being praised for his stance on Kaepernick and protesting athletes, and he rebuked a fan who yelled out a anti-Muslim slur during the national anthem, right? And President Obama thanked him for doing that. And Aaron was considered a socially aware athlete that the media was praising. And then all of a sudden, the same media members who were praising him for that really destroyed him over the COVID misdirection. And really, it was a lie, frankly. And Aaron did admit to me he made a mistake there. He doesn't admit many mistakes, but he did say, "I should have told my truth at the time." And I do think he would have gotten less than half the criticism he did get had he told his truth, which was he was allergic to an ingredient in Pfizer and Moderna and concerned about Johnson & Johnson side effects. Had he said that, I think things would have gone a little differently for him, but he didn't. And he's a very smart person, but sometimes he's too smart for his own good. And that was certainly one of those times.
That's interesting. And what I'm taking away from this conversation is just that he is totally capable of contrition, which he doesn't always come across that way. Like, he seems to back himself into a corner at times and then just not really back down. But it's interesting to hear that to you, he said a few of those things where he's like, "You know, I made a mistake." And that's refreshing, I think, to hear that.
Yeah.
Ian,
you don't hear the all-time greats say that very often in any context. I was wrong. I'm sorry. They just don't say those things.
Yeah. I have one more question for you. I'm a writer myself, not books. I'm not smart enough to do what you do, but do you write? How do you write? Do you write every day? Do you have a set time, or do you pull a Kerouac and just get the mood catches you and you write for 4 days in a row? What's your process as a writer?
I'm better at night writing. I don't know why that is. I think many years as a sports columnist where I was writing after night games on deadline. Okay. And so I was used to really being locked in at night when the house is quiet and the office is quiet. But I generally like to gather as much material through reporting. And I interviewed 250 plus people for this book. And I didn't wait till I was done with those interviews before I started writing, or I never would have gotten done. But I would say I did about 100, 125 of those interviews and then started writing. And then, okay, I have a sense of where I'm going with this story. But generally speaking, I like to start with a scene that's present tense with an introduction in the book and then kind of take the life in chronological form. Well, in this case, I started with his grandfather, who was an amazing World War II combat pilot with an incredible record of service. There are very good reasons why he's buried in Arlington National Cemetery, but Edward Rogers, that story had never been told. And I found all these documents, his 44 missions against the Hitler war machine, just incredible stuff, acts of valor. And so that actually, I think, impressed Aaron, and he's talked about that publicly. And that might have been one of the reasons why he sat down with me, because he knew I was starting the book with his grandfather's service, a story that's never been told.
That's great. Ian, I wish you luck with the book. You're a four-time bestseller. You got the endorsement of Peter King, who called it a masterwork on Aaron Rodgers. I hope it's a huge success for you. And this has been really fun. I hope you come back and talk to us again sometime.
Hey, Pete, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. All right. Check out the book, Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. So from the 920, Drake from Green Bay says, Haley's career could be short-lived if she hawk Tua's on the studio microphone. Well, hopefully they have a cover on it, Drake. I am so listening to that podcast, and I'm going to ask her, I'm going to plead with Haley to lower the cost of her fan club, because we would love to join, but I ain't paying no $200. All right. This is exciting. We got great guests tonight. Rose Abdu from the show Hacks is here at 7:20. And right now I'm excited. I've wanted to have this next guest on for a while. She's very funny. She is a Wisconsin native who has been on all kinds of national TV shows and podcasts. She also spent time in Minnesota, as I understand it. So she's probably conflicted. We'll have to get to the bottom of that. Please welcome Mary Mack. Mary, hi.
Oh, hi. Thank you guys so much for having me on. I was listening and I recognize your show from driving, because I'm a road dog for, 21 years or so comedy. And I know the show. I've heard Civic Media driving down around Platteville in that area.
Oh, nice.
And I'm stoked.
Fantastic.
To be on. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope we make your drive through Platteville or wherever in this wonderful state of ours more pleasant, Mary, as you've made, as your comedy has brightened our day. We listened to a clip just a little bit ago. So funny. Let's talk about, it says you're a native Minnesotan and Wisconsinite. I'm not saying that can't happen, but how did it happen? And what's it like dealing with that kind of inner turmoil?
Yeah, it is a lot of inner turmoil. You're right. I was born in Minnesota, but from the time of four up, I grew up in northern Burnett County, Wisconsin, and then I went to school in Oshkosh, and oh my gosh. And then after a while, I moved back to Minnesota because of the comedy club in Minneapolis is so good.
Yeah.
And I've been almost like, I'm back in Wisconsin, but it's almost been equal parts, almost, it feels like. And my parents are from Minnesota, and the biggest town we had growing up was, Duluth, and
Yeah.
You have six kids, you buy your school clothes in Duluth because there's no sales tax. And, you know, that's where grandma is. That's where the fast food was. So, you know, I don't know. There is a lot of inner turmoil. And it's really hard to give up that Minnesota residency because, man, the dump privileges. Holy cow. You wouldn't believe it. You feel like a queen there. You put something in the alley, they just take it away for free and they recycle it. It's like $50 to get rid of a refrigerator in Wisconsin. I've been smuggling refrigerators and mattresses back into Minnesota to get rid of them for free. So I totally think it's worth the property tax I'm paying there. It's like a drug dealer, but I think I'm doing good things.
But you're providing a much healthier service, giving people something to sleep on and keep their food
cold.
Yeah,
well, no, I take your old mattress. I put it in the alley of the house that I don't even use just because the dump privileges are so good. So I'll bring the truck down. I'm going to be down there. I think you might be a 715 person too, but
I am.
I'm going down to Green Lake, and I'll be in Mineral Point, and I'll be in... If anybody from southern Wisconsin needs me to bring my truck and recycle your mattresses for free, I'm willing to do it.
Boy, two drink minimum, some laughs, and free recycling. That you don't get that from many other stand-up comedians. I applaud you. That's you're biting off a lot there, my friend. It sounds like
I had to buy a trailer. I'm a border kid too, right? So we grew up in Burnett County. We got Minnesota channels. But I had to buy a trailer just so I could smuggle in all the appliances and mattresses to recycle them for free. I'm serious about it.
Now, is that something you can write off because you bought the trailer? Is it paying for itself somehow?
No, not yet, Pete. It's not yet paying for itself.
You just like to help. You don't need the write-off. I applaud that. So where do you, I grew up in Chicago, moved to Wisconsin when I was like 12, moved back to Chicago to do stand up when I was, in college and all that. So I have that mixed state, genetics as well. When I'm in Chicago, I was a cheesehead. And when I'm here, I'm a fib. I can't win. Do you find that, the same with Wisconsin and Minnesota?
Yeah. I don't know. I here's what I do. I do know people in Wisconsin that are just so much friendlier. And if you talk to a Minnesotan person, they'll agree with you. Mm. Friendlier, easier to get to know. People will live in Minnesota and not know their neighbor for like 10 years. So it's just, it's easier. And I guess, I'm living off the South Shore and, there's still so many Minnesota folks, so it's kind of like it's a nice blend of people, and so far no name calling. It's pretty good. Hostility so far.
I'm not trying to start anything, but
yeah,
living next to someone and not knowing who they are for 10 years, that sounds a little subversive.
Anybody could be a serial killer. You can't. It's terrifying. I mean. But here everybody welcomes you to their. I remember I was in college. I worked a summer in Door County, and every stranger invited me over to dinner. It was amazing. The Eastern Wisconsin friendliness. It's great. The hospitality is great.
It's fantastic, and that's nice to hear you say that. So we're both 715ers. I admit I don't have a landline, so I don't have a 715, but I live in the 715. Are you a resident of Wisconsin right now? I thought you were like on one of the coasts.
Oh no! After I used to have to live out in LA part time, but then because of COVID, one of the very few good things that came out of COVID is when you're a voiceover artist, you can actually just do that remote now.
Oh, nice.
And I had done it remote in the past, but not all shows were willing to do it. And I do a Hulu Disney-owned show called Solar Opposites. And the whole time with COVID, I've been recording. It's easiest for me to drive over to Duluth, or sometimes I drive down to Minneapolis, and I will take my mattresses with me. but they don't give me any guff about it. They're still letting me do it. So as long as I can do it, I'm able to put some money away this way and not pay that LA rent. And so I'm really grateful. I hope I still can. I hope people watch my show. Our fifth season came out August 12th. Yeah. And then we just got done recording the sixth season. And I hope people watch it because I get health insurance from it. And my God, your life is totally different when you get health insurance.
Well, and you need it when you're sleeping on a dirty mattress in a foreign state. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I get a lot of infections. So
you probably get pink eye on a weekly basis.
Yeah. Pink eye, brown eye, green eye. I got all of the eyes. I mean, those are colors of eyes you can have, but unnatural. Yeah. So a lot of rashes, and you have health care. It's not such a big deal anymore.
All right. So the show is called Solar Opposites. It's on Hulu. The fifth season. Check it out. It sounds great. I'm totally watching that. Conrad, let's fire up some popcorn. We're watching Solar Opposites.
Sounds good.
Yeah. I love this.
It's not for kids. I always try to give them a clean take of something.
Okay.
And they really enjoy making me yell. It's like with my dialect, they claim I have an accent, which I don't think I do. And then they enjoy making me swear and yell. So it's not for kids. I know a lot of teenagers think they're getting away with something watching it, but it's really not for maybe real religious people either. I'll give you a list of people who it's not for. It's probably not for my mother-in-law. She's a former Canadian church secretary, so she wouldn't like it. Yeah, it's probably not for any born-again Christians.
Okay.
Probably ELCA is fine. But there's a long list of people it's not for. But that being said, it's been popular. At one point, it was the most popular show on Hulu.
So that's great.
I know there's something to it.
So if someone is
headed... watch it. I'm too busy hauling appliances over to Minnesota.
You're too busy giving back to humanity. Well, and that's a good excuse. But if you're on a bad path to where you haven't been born again yet and you're still spiraling, this sounds like the show for someone like that.
Oh, yeah. If you're going to hell, go ahead and watch Solar Opposites on Hulu because, man, that's the show for you.
Okay. All right. So, Mary, I want to ask you about, obviously, you have a vintage camper in the North Woods. I saw this on your website. You're restoring it or what's going on with the vintage camper?
I did. I may have over restored it. Some things aren't meant to have air conditioning. I'll tell you that. This 1975, maybe 77 scamp.
Oh, sweet.
It's made in Minnesota as well. And I do haul it over there for repairs usually once a year. But, yeah, I enjoy it. My husband and I, he's a comedian too, Tim Harmston. He's fantastic. We went on a 6-week tour in it, which we'll never do again just because, you have to get somewhere. You're driving 8 hours. You hurry up and set up your camper and then run to the show. And you don't even necessarily, there's not a shower most of the time.
Ooh.
So I can't believe that, though. We did every day shows 6 weeks all the way to the East Coast and back and through Canada, and we didn't even fight until we got an hour from home.
Wow.
Can you believe it? This camper is 9 feet long inside. It's tiny.
Wow.
It's tiny, and we made it that long.
That's pretty good. That sounds like a really strong marriage.
I don't know anymore.
is Tim from Wisconsin as well, or does he object to living here? Does he like living here? How's that working out?
No, he grew up in Menominee, Wisconsin, but he started his stand-up in Chicago, too. And actually, Tim's a really, really nice guy until I get in the truck to back the camper up, and then he immediately starts yelling. Nothing has to happen. He just goes from 0 to 12, beyond 10. The backing up of the campers, no matter who's doing it, throws them into a complete rage. But we're still together, so.
And if
I've
you
had
want
this camper for a while.
If you want marriage counseling, that's probably something you have to go to Minnesota for too, I would imagine.
Yeah, there's also free marriage counseling.
Free marriage counseling. Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I thought.
One of us has to keep a residency there. Somehow a residency, a citizenship, I guess.
Yeah, you better hope they never build a wall in Minnesota between these two states.
Hey,
Mary, how did you get started in stand up? You're up in northern Wisconsin. You said you started in the Twin Cities, great comedy town.
Well, you know what, though? I have 2 degrees in music. That's why I do comedy.
Oh, wow.
So my second degree in music was in Nashville, and I had a polka band, being from Wisconsin. I missed my polka.
Oh, my gosh.
So I had a polka band down in Nashville, and we were so bad that I had to stall for time by telling stories in between the songs. And then pretty soon people said, you know, we like the stories a lot better than the songs, which is the worst thing you ever could hear if you're a band.
Yeah.
And so then I just went into comedy, and I didn't know I could do comedy. I started out thinking, you know, what could I do? And then it just wound up that there were the most open mics for comedy to figure out what you wanted to do.
So what's the band doing now? Are they all, like, working at Jiffy Lube, or what are they doing?
It could be a documentary.
hold that thought. Let's pick up there. Mary Mack is here, ladies and gentlemen. She's a great comedian. She's one of Wisconsin's very own. She even has a 715 area code. It does not get more Wisconsin than that. We'll be back with more with Mary on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network. I just saw more sad gelato people walk by. It's just depressing. I'm sorry. Like, during the summer, there are hordes of people going next door for gelato. Now it's just sad gelato. It's fall gelato. It's not summer, and I don't have any place for it. Welcome back. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. We are broadcasting statewide from downtown Green Bay, and we are talking with comedian Mary Mack, who is a 715er, native Wisconsinite, and Minnesota. She's joining us tonight over the phone. We were talking about how you got your stand-up, Mary, and please continue.
I'm surprised you guys came back, actually.
What, you think we just took a powder or something?
Anytime somebody gets back on the phone with me, so thank you so much.
Well, you know, this is our pleasure, really. You're a lot of fun. This is really, I can't believe we haven't had you on sooner. This is great.
Yeah, this is nice. This is I don't even have to leave my house, so thanks for letting me call in.
Absolutely.
That would have been a toughie driving to Green Bay and back.
Hey, you are, I don't know how far of it, what is that, like a 6-hour drive?
It's about 5 hours from here, I think.
In the scampi? Or in the scamp?
Oh, scampi. I always add a day on for the scamp. You don't know. One time I brought it into the scamp dealership, you know, they hate seeing me come. Because I have like a whole paint job, everything. And I put marine lights on it, everything like that.
Oh,
so they hate seeing me come down the road to get a repair. The last time I was in there, they're like, do you know that this isn't attached? Like, the top part wasn't even attached to the wheel part, you know, the chassis. So it was just like a loose lid on a trailer, basically.
And, well, unfortunately, you might be talking to the one person who knows less about scamps than you, and that would be me. So I'm not...
Okay.
But, you know, hey, if you ever bring it to this way, come to the eastern part of the state again or Green Bay, you have to come in and be on the show here. It would be fun. You have any dates coming up in this area, or talk about your tour a little bit?
I don't think I can get it right. I can't get it's going to take me a while to get the mice carcasses out of there. But I have a date coming up this weekend in Oshkosh, and that's close to you.
Yeah.
No, it's not Oshkosh. It's Green Lake. In October, I'm in Oshkosh.
Okay.
At Time Community Theater. So I'm going to be there October 24th, a Thursday. And so then this weekend I'm in Green Lake, and I'm not sure how far that is from you. But it's not too far from Oshkosh.
Okay. Well, we'll touch base.
Yeah, I got MaryMacComedy.com, so if people want to look at the schedule on there. I believe I was trying to tell you something about, how I got started in comedy. Yeah. Was that enough of a description for you?
Or do you need
me to elaborate?
No. Listen, we just got a text on the stream. Jim Denny says, Mary Mac is awesome funny. When is she playing Around the Valley? Well, Jim, there you go.
Oh, yeah.
Green Lake coming up. Yeah.
Yeah. Oshkosh on October 24th at Time Community Theater. It's on my website. Or else Green Lake. Yeah. Green Lake Thrasher Opera House this Saturday, September 7th.
That's right.
And I will not proselytize the mattress recycling. I will actually do comedy. I'll do my bits. And I have a really wonderful opener. She's great, Dana Ehrman, and she's out of Milwaukee, and I hire clean comics, so, you know, because then you can entertain all ages, and it's easier to go on TV and do comedy if you're clean, so.
Definitely.
I keep it pretty clean, so.
That's excellent. So, you're so unique. I mean, you're very funny, but you have a very unique take and persona. Who are your influences when it comes to stand-up? Who did you grow up watching, and how did you kind of steer your comedy this way?
You know, I didn't even know you could be a stand-up comedian, but there's really just two people. I saw, before I started, I only saw one tape, a VHS tape that way back when, Louis Anderson, who I just adore, and you know, and he later became my friend and my mentor, and that's hard to, you know, just to think he's not here anymore is tough, but he was really the only, I mean, and you know what, the influence was there, because I wasn't smart enough to, at the time as a kid, to know what tight writing is or what good joke writing is, but the influence there was seeing my brother-in-law, my siblings were much older than me, and the whole family sitting around watching this VHS tape and just laughing, and the fact that, you know, nobody got up and left, they stayed there, and it was like a memorable family moment, and that stuck with me. It'll stick with me my whole life, sitting in our, you know, our living room all piled up on, you know, like Thanksgiving or something, watching that that special, and it was so good, and he only got better and better and better after that. But when I was, I think it was like sixth grade or something like that, Star Search with Ed McMahon was on.
Sure.
And, I saw Ellen DeGeneres on there.
Oh, and great stand-up, yeah.
Yeah, and it might have even been before that, I'm not sure, but I think that's about the era I saw her.
Okay.
And I thought, this lady's going to be famous. And I wrote her name down on a piece of paper, and I stuck it on my bulletin board. And I left it there. I stayed on my bulletin because my mom never, you know, we never cleaned out that room for ages. And so it probably stayed up there at least 12, 15 years. And on a bulletin board, and when people, you know, I'd be in college, and I'd have friends come over, and they'd see the bulletin board. And it'd just be things I thought would happen, and I put them on my bulletin board, and Ellen DeGeneres' name was there, and she did pretty dang good for herself.
As did Louis Anderson. I'm so envious, because, like, when I would watch comics, Louis Anderson is one of those guys, like, you watch, and it's like, man, I wish I knew him. Like, I wish I was friends with him. He just seemed like a good guy, and he's so funny. And a Minneapolis guy, right?
He was so funny. What was that you said?
And he was a Minneapolis guy, correct? Isn't he
from
there?
Yeah, he grew up in St. Paul. Okay. So sometimes I'd have to pick him up, you know, and I'd pick him up in a Dodge Neon that was about 4 inches off the ground. Whoa. And I remember one time I picked him up, and you know, he always had a weight struggle, and he was always trying to get in shape. And then he always, you know, he had a bum knee. Oh my God, he couldn't believe I picked him up in a car that close, that small, and that close to the ground, and to get him out.
Comedian Mary Mack, that's the voice you're hearing. She's so funny. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.